Wawa.
That's his win in stage six?
Warren McGill, baby. Wawa. That's a good pick. When he wins, play that back. Wawa.
All right.
Who's your going Izaguirre.
Which one?
The one that's in the race. There's only one in the race, I checked.
Off stage six, who's winning?
I'm gonna go with Bernal. Okay. I want to see some fireworks. I want to see some dissension within the team, you know.
I know.
So for the sixth stage, I think you're going to see Thibaut Pinot. I don't think you're gonna see that. Well, you may see the front group with the win, but for the GC leaders, Thibaut Pinot or in Kruiswijk in yellow when the day's done.
Oh, and meanwhile, further back, we switch to Bardet, which is unkind, because it's about to finish. 21%, 24% for the boys out front. Bardet's cooked. Let's get back up, and here we are. And it's Toons that's grinding it. Brilliant classics, man. He's going for it, and he's going to crest this one, and he's going to take the stage. But I think Ciccone may well indeed take the yellow. He's starting to weave all over the place now. He's almost coming to a halt. 24% was always going to hurt, Sean, and this is a slow bicycle race to glory. Here, fantastic.
Yes, well, Toons, he just pushed on all the time as he gets the stage victory, and he was the strongest one on that final run.
And they have to push him away.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 136 of Between Two Wheels podcast. This is your host, Tyler Yonke. Thank you for joining us today. And what you just heard there was some wild speculations and predictions for stage six. Did anybody nail it? No, but I think there were some good picks there. And look, they're the top, you know, 10, 15 possible GC guys coming into stage six. They all had somewhat of a chance. You don't know how they're going. So any possible predictions, we'll talk about them. We'll go through them and see who did what and how that broke out. Did the stage live up to its hype? I think so. Before that, though, we'll look at stages five, stage six, give you a breakdown, results, some revelations of what happened during those, some things that make you go, some winners and losers, little ins and outs of the tour. So let's get going. Okay, so stage five. Look, I really want to talk about is stage six, but we can't. We'd be remiss if we didn't go over stage five and the results from there. Stage five was Saint des Vosges to Colomar. 169 kilometers. It was a lumpy stage near the end. It had four categorized climbs, a three, a two, and a two, and a three. The last one coming around 20 plus somewhere in there, kilometers to the finish, drops down flatness. Look, what you're going to have there and what we saw there were the big teams coming that wanted a sprint finish without the sprinters. You had Bora Hansgrohe. They wanted one for Peter Sagan. Sunweb wanted one for Michael Matthews, Matteo Trentin wanted one in there. So what happened was during that climb, you had a break off in the front with Tim Wellens. They ended up getting drawn back, but in the resulting there is you get to see climbers getting popped off the back. You get Dylan Groenewegen, Greipel, Viviani, all the big sprinters, except for in this case, you had Peter Sagan, who's not. Matteo Trentin was not. Wout van Aert for Jumbo-Visma was not. And Michael Matthews. Michael Matthews, I had talked about before, where I think he's got his climbing legs going well, and you just need a right sprint for him. And what we ended up seeing in the end was without the sprint trains, you don't see the sprinters lining up just right. And what that happens is it just feeds into the hands of Peter Sagan, who does one of the best riding as far as just look, he doesn't have a sprint train going, and he's always back up just a little bit. So Peter Sagan is not a pure sprinter. That may come as a surprise to some people when he wears the green jersey, but he's not a pure sprinter. If you were to line up a drag race with the pure sprinters in this race, he would be probably top five coming in there mostly. He's not going to get the win on a very regular basis because you have Caleb Ewing, you have Groenewegen, Viviani. All these guys have a much higher top end speed. But what he does do in these main drag race sprints when the fields are all lined up is he gets in the best position. He's always top, you know, three-ish, comes out with the sprint. He doesn't mind cutting, chopping wheels and getting in front of people. So he'll always get in the right position. With that, he gets a top placing on, you know, top fives, top threes. When Groenewegen gets crashed out on stage one, as an example, it opens it up for him when all the other ones are having problems. So, but he's also a guy that gets over to the climb. So when you have a stage like stage five, spoiler alert, Peter Sagan wins. He gets lined up just fine. He gets up there in the front. He gets right on the wheels that he needs to. People lead out too soon. As soon as he jumps, he gets a clear win. And actually, this is one of the easier ones for Peter Sagan. He gets a lot of second places, but this time he ended up being able to poach the first. What you didn't see then was it was Mateo Trentin had tried to come through. He was not able to get it. Wout Van Aert has a nice big sprint near the end, and he ends up pipping Mateo Trentin for second place. Man, he's going to be someone to watch in the future. Sonny Cabrelli made it over the climb, and I was actually surprised that he was not able to get the win since he can actually sprint finish, pack finish pretty well. And then you had Greg Van Avermaet, Julian Simon, Michael Matthews in seventh. What I did see, Julian Alaphilippe in 10th, who has a good kick for that kind of stuff as well. Michael Matthews was pushing around with Daryl Impey. They were doing some elbowing, trying to get in the right position. Michael Matthews just, I don't think he's cut for that kind of riding. So he's just not going to be taking those gambles. And when that happens, he gets ridden off the wheel. Next thing you know, he's 6-10 riders back, trying to make his move back up. He really needs to be up there sprinting from the front against Sagan to make it worth his while. He was not able to do so. Maybe he doesn't have the sprint that he thought he did, or he actually maybe doesn't have the sprint like he said he didn't have early coming into the tour. Either way, yeah, Peter Sagan getting the win, Wout Van Aert getting second, and Mateo Trentin getting third. Pretty uneventful day. Otherwise, you know, the sprinter's getting spit out, and everyone's kind of gearing up for the next day coming up, which is stage six and the big climbing. Going into that, Julian Alaphilippe in first place on the general classification. Wout Van Aert, second place at 14 seconds. Kruijswijk, the best placed GC rider, 25 seconds. George Bennett tied on time with him, his teammate. Then you have Michael Matthews. And then you have Egan Bernal, Geraint Thomas, 6th and 7th, 40 and 45 seconds with Enric Mas, Peter Sagan, Greg Van Avermaet. Okay. Interesting. We didn't talk about it earlier, but I'm sure everyone knows. A few stages ago, I think it was stage three, when Julian Alaphilippe won, there was a little bit of a pitch up to the finish, and there was a time gap of 5 seconds from Bernal to Geraint Thomas. Now, there wasn't 5 seconds in between him, but there was enough of a gap that they had to call a time difference. And so what happens is then they count back from the first person in the group that Bernal was with. He was like, you know, the end of that field, but you count back from the front person to Geraint Thomas, and while there may have only been a second between Bernal and Thomas, he gets 5 seconds. Thomas had said that he was just trying to drift back at the end and when you know, kind of take it easy through the finish, and the people he thought would kind of fill in front of him, and they didn't. He tries to close the gap and didn't happen. You know, mental lapse, and we'll see if that plays any part going into the next few stages. Stage six. Okay, stage six, Mulhouse to La Planche de Belfi. Okay, 160.5 kilometers, brutal climb out there in the Vosges Mountains. They've done this in what, 2014, 17 as well. I think, well, that's when Fabio Aru won it there. 2014, you had Nibali win it. I think in 12 was Chris Froome winning it. However, this time, instead of finishing it, it has some nasty, steep 20% sections in there, kind of a Tour Vuelta climb type of thing. Instead of finishing where they have been, they actually kicked another kilometer up to the finish. It had a little bit of a dirt road and then an extremely steep section up to the final pitch. You had a group of what, several guys off the front, maybe 7 or 8 in a breakaway today. Tim Wellens was out there with a teammate trying to, Thomas De Gendt trying to get his King of the Mountains points. He was finishing quite well. Over the last Category 3 climb, you had De Gendt took a bit of a flyer over the top of that, got the maximum points, then just was going to try to solo in from the finish. That's somewhere around 123 kilometers of a 160-kilometer stage. So you had about 40 kilometers still to go. Goes down the hill, goes back up. They have a Cat 2 and then a Cat 1. And up the Cat 2 climb, you basically start to shedding. It's Tim Wellens left. It's Giulio Ciccone left, and the winner, Dylan Toons, was in there. Was wrong with a Wanty Group Gobert rider. And over the top of that climb, you ended up getting, I think it was Ciccone ended up getting the time bonus. Well, he got a time bonus because there's actually a time bonus at the Cat 2 and the Cat 1 finishing climb as well. So interesting enough, this came into 4. Tim Wellens, I think, won the sprint over the Cat 2, so he gets the Cat 2 climbs, but Ciccone Dylan Toons are in there as well. We could confirm on the actual placings. Either way, Ciccone gets some time bonus seconds there. They hit into the final climb. Tim Wellens gets distance quite easily. You have the other two battling for it. They had, what, 4 minutes, 8 seconds coming into the climb? That was possibly enough. In the end, it ends up being enough. And Dylan Toons over the last climb, you know, they're doing a little cat and mouse. And look, Ciccone was only 140 or so down on GC, and he had a good chance to get in the yellow jersey. I don't know if his team really knew that, because he started doing cat and mouse. And it's like, dude, just let Toons get the win. You stay there as close as possible. You get the yellow jersey. Ciccone actually had a great, what, he went at least one, maybe two stages in the Giro this year, ran away with the King of the Mountains jersey, the blue jersey there in the Giro, and he looked really good climbing. So he comes into this race fit, obviously. I don't know how much rest, but he ends up getting distance right near the top there by Dylan Toons and gets second place, but he gets a second place time bonus. Man, right over the top of that climb, too, they had some people that were pushing the riders as soon as they came across the finish, because it was such a steep pitch, and they didn't. And then they had to turn around and go back down the hill, but they wanted to at least clear them out. You saw that a few years ago on the Tour of California when they had finished up in near Palm Springs. It's a steep climb, and it was so steep and hot. They had it, you know, people pushing them so that they weren't. Same idea today, and it kind of comes into account a little bit later on. Final finishing climb, 7 kilometers, a little over 7 kilometers, averaged at 8.7%. However, that had pitches of, like I said, 24 in there. That dirt road, the last kilometer, the dirt road wasn't super steep, but it was just kind of a paved, packed dirt road. And I think it lulled some people in because they came up to the finish. Not a lot of people had been the old finish. They came up to the old finish and then they had the dirt. I don't think a lot of people have been able to recon the other section to see really what was going to be the case as far as that last part. A lot of the interviews I heard, people like, well, we've been to the normal top. We haven't seen the existing new one. People that maybe have and haven't seen it will see how that breaks down based on what happened. Starting up the climb, the Cat 2 before the final one, TJ Van Garderen gets distance. He ends up clawing his way back right before the start of the final Cat 1 climb. Immediately gets popped off again. Going up there, you have Movistar. They're in the lead. They're taking over from Ineos. First of all, Ineos hits the climb. They're doing their normal Team Sky robot thing. But then you start to see Movistar coming to the fore. You see Groupama coming to the fore as well. You see Mikel Landa take a fly. And I don't know what Movistar is doing, kind of with their strategy. It seems like they do the same thing every tour. They come in the first few stages, they try to light it up from the bottom. Then they have a guy attack out of there. Why are you attacking if you're lighting it up? So Landa, I don't know that Landa is on the same page as these other guys. You have Valverde, who's leading the group for Movistar. He ends up peeling off. He's obviously not a rider that's going for GC this year, even though he's like high school eating disorder girl weight. I mean, the rumor has it that he's like 120 some pounds. This dude's super tiny this year, but it wasn't enough for him to hold on after he did the climb. So Mikel Landa takes off. Then Groupama comes to the front. They're pulling it in there for Goudeau is pulling it for Pinot, who I picked for that. You know, Pinot, evidently he lives about 20 miles, born and lives about 20 miles away from the base of that climb. He says he's done it like 20 plus times this year, 10 times in the spring, and he's fit and ready for it. So, and you can tell by who was able to close at the top that he knew that finishing section. So what you end up having is they come to the last kilometer. Julian Alaphilippe is still there. Pretty incredible. Now, I say pretty incredible. This guy can obviously climb really well when he wants to. Whether he can do it for a full three-week Grand Tour, that's to be decided. Yesterday, hearing different interviews by DSs and some other sports directors, they don't think, well, Matt White specifically with Mitchelton Scott, he doesn't think he's a threat at all for a three-week tour. Like I said, Mike Sayers, been in here, he's indicated that he thinks that Julian Alaphilippe will develop into that. Whether he's ready to do that or not, I don't know. But he's had multiple, you know, what, won the King of the Mountain jersey, was it last year? So he obviously can go for 3 weeks and he can get himself over these climbs just fine. Today was one of those days. He looked really well. Coming to the last kilometer, they start to, Julian Alaphilippe attacks on the dirt. They bring back Landa and everything starts to disintegrate out. Before they're even hitting that dirt, Roman Bardet is getting distanced. You didn't expect to see that either, but he is. And, you know, one of the French hopes for the tour is out the door. He ends up losing He's 27th on the day, Roman Bardet. So he did not fare well. And what you ended up seeing at the top, they come around a corner. Alaphilippe starting to lose some steam. Geraint Thomas is blowing out of the group to the front, attacking, sitting down, seated the whole way up this ridiculously steep climb. He overtakes Julian Alaphilippe. He powers on to the finish. But out of the wake, there's Thibaut Pinot, and he closes in on Thomas right at the end, just 2 seconds back of him. So what you ended up seeing for the overall is Dylan Toons, Giulio Ciccone, 11 seconds behind, gets a time bonus. Zandro Maurice of the Guanti Group Gobert, 105 back. Geraint Thomas then from the GC pack comes out 144 behind. So everything really we need to calculate from that point on. Geraint Thomas, 2 seconds back of him is Thibaut Pinot. Like that was my prediction on the day. Julian Alaphilippe, coming in basically the same time as him. Nairo Quintana had a decent day, 151. Emmanuel Bachmann of the Bora Hansgrohe team, Jakob Fuglsang, 153. So really good job. Obviously, he's recovered as well. Then you have a group smattering there, Landa, Port, Egan Bernal. So Bernal loses. He's at 153 to Geraint Thomas at 144, loses 9 seconds to him. There's that five-second differential taken back. And, you know, look, Bernal, it was split up enough that it was not one of those situations, which I don't like to see when you have, because I want to see a good battle and I actually want to see the strongest guys come out of it. So I was a little concerned, I wouldn't say worried, but a little concerned that you may have a situation where a Bernal attacks, you know, 5K to go and Geraint Thomas is maybe feeling good and he's not in position to chase him down. You can't chase him down. And they just let him go. Maybe the other riders aren't strong enough as well. I want to see this battle. This was not one of those, even though Thomas took off, I don't think the way that it was so steep, I don't think you have a problem of Bernal going as hard as he can to get his own finish. And they would say, oh, he was pulling riders in with him. It was just the way it was everyone separated. You can lose, you know, 2 seconds just coming over the finish, which we'll talk about with Bardet here in a second. Richie Port had a decent day with Bernal. Adam Yates at 158. Dan Martin, 158. Rigoberto Urán at 15th place at 202, tied with Mike Woods. It was good for him. George Bennett was ahead of Kruijswijk. He came in at 202 as well. Henrik Maas of the Quickstep team at 217. Bakke Mollemaert. Steven Kruijswijk, 20th place, 219. I had predicted that he was going to take the yellow jersey today. He did not. What we ended up seeing was by just a few seconds, Giulio Ciccone ends up taking the yellow jersey with his time bonus on this penultimate climb to before the category two climb to the finish. Before the Cat 1, he also got a time bonus there. He ends up in the leader's jersey by 6 seconds. I think if Alaphilippe had not have attacked in the last kilometer, he actually would have retained it because he attacked hard and then blew at the top, being able to hold on. And he had a very sizable gap to Thomas. So if he had maybe held on and then used that kick he had, you know, instead of using it really early. And I just think as guys not knowing that finish, they're kind of getting lulled into it by this dirt road that was not very steep, thinking, oh, I'm just going to have a kick. And then that kick was so steep that it actually drained him pretty quickly. So Alaphilippe, 6 seconds. Dylan Toons comes in third place at 32. George Bennett, 47. Geraint Thomas, 49. Bernal, 53. Pino, 58. Kruijswijk a minute four down, so he's already, you know, conceded that 20 plus seconds that he had on the team time trial. Michael Woods 113, Ran 115, Fuglsang, Fuglsang, Jakob Fuglsang, I guess that's how you pronounce it. Emmanuel Bachmann 122, Maas, Adam Yates at 124. Down to Landa and Nairo Quintana 141 for 143 for Quintana and Landa. Look. Great stage today. What we did see was Wout Poels got dumped out early on the climb. So that was, I think it was on the Cat 2 climb before the finish. So maybe Team Sky just didn't quite have it. And you did see the Groupama. And even though I thought it was bad tactics by Movistar, but you did get to see them take to the front and you know, drill it on the front themselves. And sometimes Sky is just so damn strong and so hard going so fast that the other teams, the other riders can't attack. And or they can't go to the front and set the pace themselves. You saw that today. I imagine Wout Poels is going to, you know, they use this firing squad type of thing where Team Ineos, formerly Sky, has, you know, one rider or two riders. They take the day off. so to speak. The next day they're in form. The other ones are taking the support riders are kind of taking it off, and they do a rotation. We'll see how that works for them. Look, winners and losers on the day. I'm definitely going this go to stage five winners. You got to say Peter Sagan. Peter Sagan getting his stage win finally. I mean, he's the talk of the town when he's not getting the win, and then he finally gets it, and then, you know, as deserved. And look, get to see him on the podium taking the green jersey and the yellow jersey with his goggles, ski goggles. Doesn't 100% make cycling glasses as well? Why doesn't he just wear those? I don't know. He's an odd duck. And then I would say the other winners for stage six is Giulio Ciccone and Geraint Thomas. Geraint Thomas coming through the way he did definitely puts himself back into the running. And, you know, after the long, hard day, what, 13,000 feet of climbing, you know, five cat climbs with that finish super tough, seeing such a big guy carry himself up with these little climbers. Yeah, I'm not going to say anything more about that. But he definitely is the winner on the day, being able to distance Bernal a little bit. And everyone else. I mean, he's kind of set himself up to be the next guy coming through. So, you know, not so bad. Losers on the day, I would say, even though Nairo Quintana did well, Movistar, they're just disappointed the way that they ride. I think they could serve themselves so much better, and they don't. The other one is Romain Bardet had maybe the worst day of all the GC riders. He said he didn't know what happened. And, of course, TJ Van Garderen, who actually thought he was going to come into this maybe looking a little better. Do some odds and ends and some mailbag. It's a little odds and ends of what's going on in the tour right now. Lance Armstrong and NBC and the tour. I don't know if you've been in a hole somewhere, you don't know what the situation is. Lance Armstrong, 7-time Tour de France winner. Subsequently, he was doping all those times. He's been caught or pled to a deal. So they've stripped him of all his Tour de Frances. He's actually been a lifetime banned from the sport of cycling, which means he's not able to participate. The tour is not able to have him involved. Sports events are not able to have him involved. Matter of fact, a few years ago at the Colorado Cycling Classic, he was going to do his podcast from there, and they said, nope, we're not doing it. So he had to do it kind of offsite. I don't know if he was trying to get media credentials. So now all of a sudden he's, you know, still got his podcast going. And I've talked about it a few times. Once again, if you want to hear someone read ads most of their podcast, please, by all means, tune into that one. I don't have a problem with him at all shilling to get some dough. Matter of fact, if anybody wants to join in and have us shill for you, we'll definitely sell your products, almost anything. Regardless of the podcast, he's then being interviewed on NBC, and people are just in a righteous uproar about it. He's given his input. Most cringeworthy thing, though, is probably the delay. Chris or Kurt, my podcast partners here, had mentioned that maybe the most cringeworthy part was just hearing the 4 or 5 second delay in between conversations from, you know, Europe to here with Lance. However, people are, you know, wanting to do the boycott thing. They are, you know, threatening NBC with all kinds of things. So I'm wondering how the UCI lifetime ban thing works with television. And if that's okay, because it's run by ASO, if they're happy with it, maybe, maybe not. But NBC is reportedly one of the biggest budgets of any of the TV networks there at the tour, so they may have a little bit of pull as they want. Look, how do I feel about it? I don't know that I really care. I mean, people are so hypocritical on what they want to. A few years ago, you had Jonathan Bowyer, first American to ride the tour, all these things. He's a convicted kid toucher. Okay. When he was in his 40s or 50s, he was dating a girl in her 13, 14. I mean, this were multiple years. He was convicted on this. You know, now look, he's turned his life around, but he was out at the Colorado Classic. He's managing a cycling team. He's involved in racing. People seem to think that's fine, but geez, Lance took dope. You know, he put a EPO in his system. And so I don't know that I really care to hear him talking about at the tour with NBC. Honestly, like I said before, I use the NBC feed that I get, the ad-free one, which is Robbie McEwen and Matt Keenan. So I get quality listening without having to tune into that anyway, so it doesn't matter. But it is interesting how people will have their own little thing, and they set it on Lance, and they're really dead set I'm sure Phil Guymon's had an issue with this. I think I saw some report where he was saying, you know, Lance is ruining the tour, he already ruined the tour, right? He's not ruining this one because you don't have to listen to him. And with that also said, you know, what about Tom Danielson, Phil? You know, you hang out with him. He's your buddy. We don't need to keep going down that. But the hypocrisy, just maybe with a lot of these things, you know, we put these people up on these pedestals and then we're just shocked when they're not good human beings or whatever. Whatever. I'm more about the entertainment factor and what do I get out of it. I'm not so much going to virtue signal as to who's able to commentate. Can you do a good job? Can you give me good info? Speaking of which, Chris Horner, he's on the tour. Now, Chris Horner's been implicated by rumor that he was rider 15 in the big report, the same one that took down Lance. So people are saying that was Levi was talking about him. Could be, but he's never been found guilty. So people, you know, tend to say that. What I do like about Horner is his analysis, and he gives great analysis. So when the tour is over and I'm done watching the Aussie feed, I flip over to the NBC one and I get them talking to Christian Vandeveld, which is neither here nor there. But I do enjoy to hear the breakdown. And today was a good one with Chris Horner talking on NBC, and I think he's doing a pretty good job. If you have a question, if when he talks strategy and you want to question if Horner is saying, yes, he's saying the right thing. He almost invariably, he's going to be saying the correct thing on strategy. The guy does know his business on that. One other item, Katusha, it's been announced now that they're out as a sponsor. Not very good timing for Ilna Zakarin, their Russian prodigy there. You know, if Katusha's a Russian team, looks like he's out. I know that they have Canyon Bikes, and they had Canyon, I think, had signed Vanderpool. So there's kind of some connection. I don't think it's with Katusha, but who knows to see what Canyon is still going to do. They're going to try to get a new sponsor. That's a bunch of riders, though, possibly out of a job. That kind of sucks. There's talks of them with a possible merger with the Israel Cycling Academy. So you may still be able to have them. Evidently, the Katusha, whoever owns that, you know, there's a sponsor, but whoever that owns the team has still filed for all the UCI licenses. So you're probably going to see them continue. I would like to make sure that, you know, nothing I can do, but, you know, look, remember Ineos, Dave Brailsford with Team Sky, when they announced last year that they were going out of business, they weren't going to sponsor the team anymore. He obviously came on with Ineos, which is a big budget. And his reporting at the time was there was a lot of interest out there of other sponsors. So I don't know if Katusha just wants to, hey, Brailsford, pick up the phone, give us your Rolodex, maybe share some of the wealth with us. That'd be kind of cool. Viewer listener mailbag. Tour de France 2019. This is from Critical Mile one day ago on the stage 1 through 4. 2019 Tour de France is good and multiple riders doing extraordinary racing. And G. Nozzolo is doing great for Team Dimension Data on his first Tour de France. Good choice. Thumbs up, he says. I'm supporting him all the way. Thanks for the great podcast. You know what? You're right. I want Team Dimension Data to get a win. Teams, you know, they pulled on Cavendish a few years ago. It was kind of a big deal. They had a bunch of wins. Ben King got 2 solid wins last year in the Vuelta. They're not really doing much this year. I think we had reported earlier when they got a win that it was like their 3rd win of the season. So they're not prolific this year, and it'd be nice to see them do a little bit better. So I'm pulling it too. And it'd be nice to see Nozzolo, if that was the guy that would replace Cavendish, to actually get a win. I don't know when his opportunities would come in this race because there's so much climbing. And then when it's not, you've got such a star-studded field for the sprinters. So, you know, top 10s for him and just learning along the way. I posted out a video of Jakob Fuglsang doing a little bike whip, and I put the video in there. So I just did a little highlight if you want to check that on our YouTube channel. Kurt Mills commented on there because what I said was, hey, the guy went down. I think it was Mahorik. Tratnik was the guy that jumped the curb. I said Tatchnik, whatever. I don't know how to say these names. Either way, he was on the ground. He spun the bike around. It looked like he did a bike whip right into Fuglsang. And Kurt says, come on, his leg stuck in the pedal as he's sliding faster than his bike. Sure looks bad, but it's clearly not on purpose. Keep trying, Q. One, I don't know who Q is. Two, I didn't say it was on purpose. As a matter of fact, 141 in that video, go check it out, I said it's not intentional. I don't know that he was sliding. He was still stuck in the ground. I really think his foot was in the pedal. and he was trying to get it out of the way, and it just looks horrific. Check it out. Pretty cool video. How about some things that make you go, hmm?
Things that make you go, hmm.
Julian Alaphilippe, he was able to hold near the front of the race today, and only in the last bit of the last kilometer, you know, he tacked, still going off the front there. He faltered just right near the end. That finish was much steeper than I think that the guys, even though they knew that, I just think they got lulled into kind of trying to dig their way up there, especially him, and then he ended up losing a little bit. What we did see, though, Robin Bardet, right at the finish line, he had a mechanical, and his chain must have come off. And he is right at the finish line. He's standing on the finish line. And I'm like, dude, just get across the line. He's trying to do his wheel. And I think his front wheel must have already been across the line. But then he's just ready to turn around. There's one of those guys, like I said, was going to be there to push him. And this guy's like, get over the line. Get over the line. I'm assuming he did because unless that's how he lost all his time. But he came off in that last kilometer. So, I think what the rule is, you just need your front wheel to break the plane like football. And then you're officially across the line, because that's how you see it when it's a bike throw. It's the first one that the front edge of the front wheel, assuming you're going across front wheel first, the front edge breaks that plane. That's how you do it. So he was obviously fine. He knew it. He seemed to be calm about it. The support worker there seemed to be a little more stressed about it. Either way, he gets an official time today. But it was an interesting little video to see. Lastly, Tom Dumoulin. Well, he's not at the Tour. But, you know, being a favorite coming in and having got second last year, having won the Giro a few years ago, second in the Giro last year, he's a favorite and he's a guy to be talking about. Well, he's still in the news. So evidently, you know, this knee issue that happened, there was some conflict with Team Sunweb, says we didn't really even know about, you know, there's a problem. I don't think he's very happy with Sunweb right now. And there's rumors that he is trying to skip out because I think he has his contract through 2020. Or 2021, I'm not sure, but he's trying to get out of his contract. Rumors are that he wants to go to Jumbo Visma. That's the Dutch team. He's Dutch, makes sense. But does it? I mean, they have Primoz Roglic, they have Steven Kruijswijk, George Bennett. And, you know, what does this do to Ryder? You know, one that we've talked about is a Nielsen Paulus, American, on the team. I don't believe he's got his contract renewed, and it's up at the end of the season. So, you know, what does it do to other riders like that? Maybe that opens up some spots for other, you know, I don't know what Sunweb does, but there's also rumors that CCC is looking for a Grand Tour rider, even though they said they're kind of going to stay away from that. You know, Zakarin is one that's been rumored, you know, when you have a Russian leaving the Russian team, that doesn't bode well as well. So that's another probably more legitimacy to the rumor they're done. And Ineos has been reported as interest in Tom Dumoulin. I mean, they'll just buy anybody up there, like the Yankees. Anyway, who knows where he's going to go? Personally, I like to see it spread out. Keep you know, maybe, I don't know, CCC would support him. Maybe he just likes giant bikes and wants to get back there. Nielsen Paulus, though, we need a contract for him. So if anybody can help him out, how do you think? We were having a conversation offline about Nielsen Paulus, and yeah, you know, you see Thomas. You've seen Froome, you know, developing through their career and being able to come to the fore. And you look back on them 5 years ago, you go, would they be a Grand Tour winner? No, I'm not saying Nielsen's going to be a Grand Tour winner, but the guy can time trial. He can climb. Give him some, you know, some patience. He's just barely out of the U23 ranks. Or is he still in there? Either way, he's right close by that age range. And give him some time. Someone, though, give him a contract. All right, that's what we have for today. Let's take a look and see what we have coming up on the stages the next few days for the Tour. I mean, so we've gone through six stages. We've got stage seven tomorrow. It is Belfort to Chalon-sur-Saône. I don't know what that means. 230 kilometers. There's a Cat 4, a Cat 1, a Cat 4 about halfway through, and then, you know, about last 100 plus kilometers, just kind of milky downhill, should be somewhat easy. Then we've got the next day on Saturday. So that's Friday. And then Saturday's stage looks dangerous. So it starts to go towards the Massif Central. It's Macon to Saint-Étienne. That was, I think this is over where you saw the Dauphiné. 199 kilometers with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categorized climbs. Cat 3 near the finish. All of them are twos and threes. That's probably a Sagan, Michael Matthews, Alaphilippe. You got to mix him in the day. Greg Van Avermaet. Maybe you have a breakaway, kind of depending on what those teams are doing. Sunday is Saint-Étienne to Brioude. 170 kilometers. It's got three climbs of one, three, and a three. That's some. The last three is near, somewhat near the finish. So you may try to see them get rid of the climb, the sprinters again, and see how that one works out. Then you have, interestingly, you have a Monday and then the rest day on Tuesday. Monday doesn't look too earth-shattering as well. Kind of a replay of some of these others. Saint-Flour to Albi, and then 218 kilometers. These are the ones kind of coming down the Massif Central until you're going to get try to get them down south over to Po, which doesn't happen till the next week, and that's when you start hitting some more mountains. Time trial. And then you get the next weekend, finally, some big climbs out there in the Pyrenees, the Tourmalet, Foix. Anyway, should be pretty good going. And hopefully it'll be some good riding. I expect to see probably coming into next weekend, you're probably going to see Sagan with another win or so. I kind of see that good, maybe possible chance for the breakaway. Some of these teams, you know, like Trek's now in charge with the yellow jersey with Ciccone. Ciccone, and are they going to work for that? You know, they've got Richie Porte as their main guy. Are they going to kind of, you know, how long did they want to hold that out? Well, look, I think Trek, I don't know how well Richie Porte's going to go this year. The odds are something's going to happen. He's going to wreck. So they have otherwise going to probably even win a stage. Let's say Richie Porte does well. So keeping the yellow jersey might be their best bet for a satisfying tour. So I think they do what they can to next week to keep Ciccone in the yellow as long as possible. But you may try to see Bahrain Merida with Dylan Toons trying to get up there as well since he's in second. Either way, been a great tour so far, and I'm glad we had stage six with some little excitement, a little GC shakeout. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, everybody. As I said, episode 136. Check us out on any of the platforms, Between Two Wheels podcast on our YouTube channel, Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, all of that out there. Share the show, make a few comments. We appreciate it if you join in with the comments. We'll try to read them on our mailbag. And once again, enjoy the show, enjoy the tour. Thanks a lot.